Today I'm going to speak about selflessness as a principle of brahmachari life and some of the particular implications of that. I'm bringing this up, there's a particular situation facing me. The nature of Kali Yuga is that it's so insidious. Do you know what the word insidious means? Would you like to try and define it? Give a quick definition of it.
Insidious.
I think the others don't. Do you know what insidious means? Yes, you're an MA in English. Is it? You're an MA in English, I heard? BB. What does that mean? BA in English. Yeah. Yeah. So do you know what insidious means? Insidious. Okay.
Insidious means something very, is it evil, dastardly, rascal?
Yeah, evil, dastardly, harmful, malevolent means of bad intent, and often subtle also. Subtly malevolent. And that means that you may not immediately detect its symptoms. So, Kaliyu means kalahal. You don't know what that word means. Everyone. I'm speaking here to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 devotees from India. Do you know what kalahal means? Do you have that word in Tamil? No. Kalahal. Means quarrel, dissent. Kali means kalahal. So the nature of Kali Yuga is so insidious that even between guru and disciple, in which that is supposed to be a relationship of deep trust. Actually, between a real guru and real disciple, that means spiritual guru and spiritual disciple, because there are also family gurus who perform more like a priest, or there may be gurus for teaching music or dance, but even in that, the relationship is supposed to be very close. But that trust is supposed to be there even more than one would trust one's own parents, which in traditional cultures the trust is very deep, not in the modern age. So anyway, in Kali Yuga, Kali is so insidious that in between guru and disciple there can be misunderstandings. Kali Yuga, especially Kali, the personality of Kali, especially enters in the fifth place he was given for dwelling by Maharaj Parikshit, where there is gambling, animal slaughter, illicit sex and intoxication. These are all places of Kali. But Maharaj Kali said, well, there's no place where in your kingdom where these exist. So then he was allowed to reside in gold. And nowadays all the gold is locked up and we have imaginary money or theoretical money. At one point there was gold coins, then it became paper money, and then plastic, and now it's mostly all theoretical. It just doesn't exist. You just write, plastic. You just write, you sign $20 billion from one account to another, but there's no, it's just theoretical. There's no actual. Anyway, that's not the main point of what I wanted to discuss. I wanted to discuss the principle of selflessness. Oh, okay, well, as going off on tangents, I'll just go off on another little one. This morning, when you were singing the Tulasi Arati Kirtan, for the second day in a row, you sung Seva Adhikara. The word is Seva Adhikara. There's no word as adhikara, which shows that it's a long-standing parampara. This is going on for many, many years. When I first joined, there were devotees improperly singing Seva Adhikara, and still it's going on. So you can see, it's a small thing, but it's wrong. So it's better to do it right. So, the basic principle of Brahmacharya life in ISKCON, or in a spiritual organization, is that we come for spiritual life. We come for spiritual, not material gain. That's understood. That's supposed to be the situation. We come to serve. That means selflessness. There are many aspects of selflessness. One of them is that one agrees to be controlled. One voluntarily agrees to act under authority. Another is that one is supposed to have minimal possessions. The minimal possessions are described actually in Srimad Bhagavatam. We don't exactly follow that. There's the mekhala, the belt made of munja grass, I think it is, and a stick. Brahmacharya has a stick. Well, that's one less thing that Brahmacharis don't have nowadays. But anyway, the idea is minimal possessions. Nowadays, it seems the minimal possessions also include some kind of audio playback device, cell phone, which is essential for everyone in the world, right? If you don't have a cell phone, you cannot live in this world as a proper human being. I don't want to live in this world, that's why I never had a cell phone. All such necessities are there. Brahmacharya traditionally has an umbrella. Have you seen the picture of Vamana Dev? He always has, always shown with an umbrella. Brahmachari with an umbrella. Anyway, the point is to have minimal possessions. And Brahmacharya life is especially meant for practicing and training in Niramama Nirahankara. Niramama means I don't have a sense of non-possession. Mama means mine, and nir is negating. And nirahankara. Ahankara in the material world means to think, I'm a very big person. I'm very important. So, nirmama nirahankara. This training is there because in the material world, the general sense is, Ishvaroham aham bhogi. Ever heard me quote that before? Almost every lecture. Because that is what we are trying to overcome, this mentality to understand that Krishna is the controller and the enjoyer. I am not. So nirmama niraham. These words come up in Bhagavad Gita in sequence. Nirmamo nirahankara. In the Krishna's description of the devotee in the 12th chapter. So one is supposed to practice this rigorously in Brahmacharya life. That again, practice. It may not be fully internalized, but that practice is there. And by performing externally, one is supposed to imbibe that internally, that one's consciousness is purified by that. So that is done. We learn of traditional Brahmacharya life, how the Brahmacharis, they would live very simply and serve their guru completely selflessly. Most Brahmacharis in traditional Varnashram society, they marry, although it is not completely required. Those who join as Brahmacharis in ISKCON, generally the idea is that, well, they're going to give it a good go at not getting married, although most of them do end up, unfortunately. Well, I shouldn't say that. I'll upset the Grihasthas if I say that, but that's my sannyasi perspective. Marriage means within the Grihastha ashram, which is also meant for purification, there is some small allowance, some allowance for indulgence to some degree for the Ishvaroham Ahambhogi principle. But it's the more one takes that allowance, the more one goes away from Krishna. So grihastha life is also meant to be an ashram, a place for purification. But a brahmachari life is meant to be very rigorously living on the principle of nirmama nirahankaraha. Now, there's a problem when a brahmachari tends towards grihastha ashram. He's not properly situated. The problem is that he requires that marriage. I'm speaking here in generic terms. That means this is not just something regarding one person. This is a common syndrome which we've seen again and again and again. Now, as I said, the brahmacharis are supposed to have minimal possessions and work and serve under authority, and in the beginning that may be very strict, just like for young children that is very strict. But as they get older, they're given more level of independence. In the beginning, the children need to be totally controlled. They can't do anything for themselves, but gradually, as they learn and they become able to do things for themselves, and they gain some measure of independence. And brahmacharis in our ISKCON ashrams also, at some point they're given some level of independence and responsibility. That's wanted, at least. Well, I heard one temple president once, actually I've heard this more than once, that say that wouldn't it be good if all the brahmacharis would just do what, but just, I actually heard the word like robots. But I don't agree with that, because human beings are not robots. Living beings are not robots. And Krishna has us with limited independence. Robots can't love Krishna. So our limited independence that has to be developed and exercised, so that we naturally tend toward Krishna. Or our natural tendency to Krishna is awakened. Now, so some level of independence is given. That means some responsibility is meant to go with that. And devotees, they may be given some responsibility within the mission also, apart from personal responsibility to get up in the morning, for instance. It's not that it should always be forever that a devotee has to be woken up and shaken, and one is supposed to become personally responsible for washing your own clothes and things like that. So, apart from individual responsibility, one may be given responsibility over others to become somewhat of a leader, or to take up some particular service in which one is not particularly supervised, is given the independence to do that. Now, as soon as one is given responsibility, there comes the question of possessions and control. Or not, maybe not exactly possessions, but a leader may be heard to say, "Oh, these are my men," or he's supposed to take. Yeah, if you take responsibility, for instance, for the microphone, to use an example, then it's almost as if it's yours. It's almost like that. You're using it in service, but you take the responsibility, you look after it, and there may be more and more things given to you. And you may have control over people to some extent. You become their authority. You may be working under another authority, but you have authority over others. So those who have well developed this spirit of nirmama nirahankara, when they get things to use in Krishna's service, they're entrusted with them, they flourish. They get things to use and they get control or authority over others, but because they have the spirit of nirmama nirahankara, nothing is mine, everything is meant for Krishna. I am a servant. Then they flourish. But others who have not developed that, then they flounder. Flourish and flounder. These flounder literally means like a fish which is taken out of water and it's flapping about. It doesn't do well. So usually someone new in devotional service, it's best not to give them much responsibility, because many times we see, especially new devotees, they may be materially very capable, but if they're spiritually not developed, then we see in many cases that by the Ishvaro Hambhogi tendency, they don't, because that has not been diminished, and the nirmama nirahankara principle has not become prominent, then they start to think of what is given to them for use in Krishna's service as their own, and they tend to think of devotees who are under their authority as, instead of seeing them as Prabhus who I'm to serve by directing them, they start to see them as actually subordinates in every sense of the term. So we've actually seen that many times, that people who are devotees who are given responsibility prematurely, they often their service in some ways may go up, but their spiritual advancement goes down. And that tendency towards Ishvaro Hamahambhogi consciousness, that naturally leads one toward Grihastha consciousness, or even non-Krishna consciousness, rather than the Brahmachari consciousness. Now, in that consciousness, though one is working with or serving, one tends, because of the lack of nirmama nirahankara and the prominence of Ishvarohamahambhogi consciousness, then, you know what these terms mean? Okay, good. Then one starts to think that I am doing so much. These are my possessions. And it's quite common that brahmacharis who have come with a motive to serve and for spiritual advancement, when they become householders or they're tending toward family life, they start to think, I worked hard for so many years, now I have nothing. They may think, well, if I'd have been working in Kami life, I could have had so much money. And they might have had, but they wouldn't have had the opportunity to serve Krishna. That's what Brahmachari life is meant for serving Krishna. The Brahmachari principle is that we're here to serve, not to take out anything materially. If we think that I deserve this, I raise so many funds, we've heard this before sometimes, Devotee said, I raised so much funds. I deserve, I should be given this much. I should be given so much money. There's even one of my ex-disciples, I guess you could call him, who from the beginning actually he was very independent, and he's been demanding and threatening money from me for the last few years, because he thinks that I cheated him by preaching Krishna consciousness, and he deserves so much money because I spoiled his life. It's actually become quite demoniac. Although, you know, he just turned, I didn't force him to join. There's no such thing as forcing anyone to join. And actually gave him, because he was so independently minded, I gave him a lot of freedom. I actually told him so many times, live in the spend time in the temple. But he liked to be very independent. And then later he complained. So, the Brahmachari principle is that if one is, I mean, that should be understood that if you decide to leave and get married, then it's not that you can take out, I worked so hard and therefore this is mine, that is mine. No, it's all for Krishna. Now you may say, well, then better don't join. And there's quite a lot of preaching like that. Something, not exactly. When we say preaching, we mean that which helps one to come to Krishna. But there's quite a lot of preaching like that all over the world. If someone is thinking of joining full time, it must be in America. Yeah, definitely it's in America also. People say, no, you have to think of your future. What will happen if you decide later that you want to be married or do something else? You don't want to be full-time dedicated. You have to look after yourself first, because no one will look after you. And it's true that devotees should know this, that ISKCON as an organization does not commit itself to look after devotees for their whole life if they do a few years of service, or give them what is called a golden handshake. Do you have that saying in America? You know what that means. But they don't know what it means. I'll explain. Golden handshake means someone's been working in a company for some years and then they leave. And when they leave, the company gives them some sum of money as a kind of appreciation or something like that. So we don't undertake to do that. Srila Prabhupada did want for Grihasthas the arrangement of rural communities where they can live simply, and that's also good for nirmama nirahankaraha, rather than this rajasic society which promotes the consciousness of Ishvaro hamahambhogi, and one is considered advanced in civilization the more one has possessions and the more one is expert in sense gratification. Whereas Brahminical culture means the more one is advanced in nirmama nirahankaraha, he's more advanced. So Srila Prabhupada wanted that. To date we haven't done very well as a society in establishing that, but at least we can say within our small circle here, we are making some steps toward that in Gujarat, Andhra Pradesh and Tamil Nadu. So, devotees should know that. Maybe we should tell devotees when they join, although it's basically an understood principle. Not only in ISKCON, but to join any religious order, just like if you become a Cistercian monk, for instance, or a Greek Orthodox monk, you being from, your body being from a Greek background. The Greek Orthodox Church still have some really far-out monks, some really hardcore monks who live very austere and meditative lives, and prayerful lives. They're quite amazing people, actually. So, if someone decides after 20 years as a Greek Orthodox monk, I don't think it happens much that they want to become a punk rocker or something instead. It's not that they're given an electric guitar or something by the Greek Orthodox Church to go and do it. They can leave. But it's understood when you join that it's understood that you're coming here for spiritual life and for dedicated life. Now, the objection may be quite commonly, that, well, the sannyasis live opulently. Sannyasis in ISKCON live opulently. Maybe some of them do. Srila Prabhupada often lived opulently. He had opulent quarters in many places. He also lived for a month in Bhubaneswar in a mud hut in January 1977 when he had very opulent quarters in many places all over the world. So Srila Prabhupada did. He used that for preaching, just like we... I personally saw in London, he had very beautiful quarters and very opulent quarters, and big people would come to, prominent people in society would come to Srila Prabhupada. If they'd invited him to some tenement, no one would have come, but inviting him to a big opulent country house, then people, big people of society will come, who Srila Prabhupada wanted to and did preach to in London, in Melbourne, and in so many places, everywhere. New York, big people came to see Srila Prabhupada because in worldly terms they thought he was a big man because he had buildings and a society and opulent quarters. So they judge by external symptoms. Although Srila Prabhupada, of course, was fully in the mood of nirmama nirahankaraha. That's sometimes questioned about our sannyasis, but whether they are living, whether they actually have that mood or whether they're enjoying. But one important thing is that they don't have wives. So anyone who can live without a wife and preach Krishna consciousness, people, and be a sannyasi, which means that you don't have any private life. Sannyasi, he can't just decide to go out to a movie or to a disco or something like that. He's constantly under surveillance, you could say. The camera is always on him. Sannyasira alpa chidra sarva loke gai. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that even a small fault of a sannyasi is widely broadcasted. Everyone shouts it out. So, people tend to give donations to sannyasis. If they did decide to have a wife and all this kind of thing, then people wouldn't give it to them, but they'd give it to them because they have that renunciation, which isn't so easy to maintain that and to be an example for others. Now, some people may say, well, they're not setting a good example. Well, if they're not, then Krishna will look after them. Everyone gets what they deserve. You may say also that many leaders in our society, they live very well, and even the brahmacharis, in many cases, they may be living comfortably and opulently, and maybe pilfering. Or pilfering means doing small-time stealing, or even more than they may be even. I've even brought, in some cases, the leaders, if you bring that, I brought that to the attention of certain leaders in our society, that I know that certain brahmacharis are doing things which are not according to the brahmachari principles. And the response, I mean, acquiring a private house which someone donated to them, and for instance, and there was a case of someone went to Brahmachari, went to order some clothes for the deities, and he took a cut for himself and he was found out. And I brought this to attention of the leaders, but their general outlook is, well, what does it matter? We don't care. As long as they're bringing in some money, we don't care if they take something. I don't agree with that. It doesn't alter the Brahmachari principle that if someone is desirous of advancement in spiritual life, then they can't say, this is mine, it's all mine. If one's living in the temple, then he has to give everything. That is the standard. Srila Prabhupada, for householders who are living in the temple community, Prabhupada said they could be there, but only if they live a very renounced life as householders also, which, again, we don't see that always, but the principle still remains. So, even if one says, well, I want to take this money to for some service or for some preaching, I want to leave the Brahmachari ashram, still it's against the principle. You have to raise funds. If you want to do some independent preaching or whatever, you have to raise funds independently. That's otherwise, what happens is, it's just like one of my Brahmachari disciples. He fell in love with some girl from the congregation in the particular city he was living in, and wanted to marry her. And although we tried to stop that, he went ahead with it. And I didn't want him to live in be in the temple community, because I said that, well, if he gets away with it, so to speak, then although we know he's a good devotee in many ways, but this is a, you know, it's a serious blemish of the serious deviation from the Brahmachari principle. And if he does it, then others may also think, well, I like that girl over there, why don't I, you know, talk to her a little bit, and then maybe I'll marry her. So I put this to the temple president, but he wanted to engage that devotee anyway, which is now going on. In many ways, the devotee is serving well. But recently, we heard that another so-called Brahmachari who's making friends with local girls, he had commented that, well, it's okay, I'll go ahead and do it anyway. And just like that other one, you know, after for some time they'll be a little angry, but then it'll be okay. So that's what happens. If you allow someone to set a bad example, then others will take that as a license to do the wrong thing. So it's better to maintain principles. Now you may think, well, this isn't very realistic. We're living, realistically speaking, we're living in an ISKCON society where we can't exactly, due to the very nature of the problem, we can't exactly say how much, but probably there have been many crores of rupees in India, many millions of dollars outside of India, of ISKCON's money, which is meant to be Krishna's money, which has been mismanaged, spoiled, misappropriated, which is a polite word for stolen. So what does it matter, you know, it just, you know, in this, the the small world of Bhakti Vikas Swami, and what does it matter if a few rupees here and there? But again, the amount we're talking about is, or thinking about, is small, although for the people you see building the buildings, who the Dalits who become the Mazdoors, you know, for them it's not a small amount. People who they're living well below the poverty line, for them it's not a small amount. But anyway, it's all Krishna's money. I personally try to live by the principle that everything for Krishna, nothing for me. What is that? Idam Narayanaya Namama in the Yajna. We say this is all meant for Narayana, not for me. This Nirmama Nirahankara principle, we should remember. Smaran Nityam Anityatvam. Remember, everything here is temporary. We come into this world with nothing. We leave with nothing, material, no possessions. Factually, I possess nothing. But if the things which come into my care, they can be used either to go to Krishna by using them in Krishna's service, or to go to hell by thinking that this is mine. Actually, Prabhupada said that if we spend even a farthing means like a paisa, if we collect money in the name of Krishna, but we spend even a farthing for our own sense gratification, then we go to hell. It's a heavy statement. That's right there in perfect quote. Perfect questions, perfect answers, which you're distributing every day. So nirmama, nothing is mine. And nirahankaraha, just smara, yeah, just remember, we're very, very, very tiny little beings. We have a short life, and we're just tiny little beings on a tiny little planet, and who are we? We're so insignificant. So we should try to cultivate that consciousness. I try to cultivate that. Everyone should try to cultivate that. That's spiritual life. That's especially in brahmachari life. We're here to learn these things. So this is the principle of selflessness. There is also a principle of pragmatism. Well, that's not no. Actually, pragmatism isn't really a principle, but pragmatism is the practical side, you can say. That sometimes if we insist on principles which are not, but we don't have the power, because we're not Ishvara, we're not Krishna, we don't have the power to implement them, then we can unnecessarily get into, or undesirably get into a big mess. Just like to give an example, which is not really contextual to this particular discussion. There was a young girl in America many years ago. She must be middle-aged by now. She joined ISKCON. She was underage, means she was not of the age of legal consent to act independently, which is probably different in different states, isn't it? Is it? I think she was about 14 years old, which is probably underage in every state. So she joined ISKCON. She joined a temple. And she told the devotees I'm unhappy at home, I want to be a devotee. And the temple sheltered her, and the parents were trying to find her, and the devotees were lying to the parents and moving her from temple to temple, and which was illegal. But the devotees thought, well, you know, she wants to be a devotee. We want to save this soul from her parents and from the Kami society. It was an illegal activity, although it was well-intentioned. I guess that could have been that could have been quoted in that recent lecture I gave on the road to hell is paved with good intentions. As a result of that illegal activity, some years later, ISKCON had to face a massive legal case in which they lost millions of dollars. They had to pay millions of dollars. And actually, when Prabhupada found out about it, Srila Prabhupada, having much more practical vision, although he came to the world to save all persons who want to come to Krishna consciousness, he told her, just send her home. Don't do this. Similarly, in the case of our godbrother Nrsimhananda, he was of legal age, but his mother was harassing the devotees like anything, and she wanted him to go home. And in the end, Prabhupada said to him, "Okay, you go home for some time, and then you come back." So in the meantime, she cooled down a bit, and he came back, and he's going on with his devotional service even now, maybe, you know, more than 30 years later. So there's the principle and there's pragmatism. Another example is that the BBT got into a big court case with what happened was they didn't want someone. One devotee who was he'd actually not been connected with ISKCON. I think he was even expelled from ISKCON. But he wasn't connected with the legal body, whatever that is. I mean, it's very. I don't even know if the ISKCON devotees themselves know exactly what the worldwide the legal status of ISKCON is. I mean, I don't understand this exactly. And BBT, exactly what its status is, because it was worldwide, because it was registered in both California and in Bombay. Anyway, one devotee wanted to print the Macmillan, the old edition of Bhagavad Gita. And the Bombay, or not the Bombay, the whatever, the BBT, they wanted to stop this, because they thought, we don't want this to be printed. It has things in it like, with the title A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, it has some ridiculous things in it which Prabhupada definitely didn't write and which definitely aren't true. The most egregious, to use this currently fashionable word, of which is that there is a planet of the trees when it's supposed to be Pitris, the forefathers. Anyway, it happened that the legal case was going against the official BBT, and eventually they settled it out of court, and it went against what the official BBT wanted to do, and that printing of the what was called the Macmillan is not the Macmillan edition anymore. They don't have the rights over it anymore. But that I think 1972 edition is going on anyway, and the BBT had to pay who knows how much, some lots of money in legal fees and this and that. So, although I agree with the principle that the old edition should be superseded by the new edition, pragmatically the course taken to try to enforce that in hindsight, it's always easy to say in hindsight, wasn't such a good idea. Pragmatically speaking also, we don't want to crush people who have come to Krishna consciousness with a desire to serve, but who later along the way find various difficulties in doing so, misunderstandings in doing so. That spirit to serve Krishna is very precious, and that should be fostered and not crushed. So we might, for the sake of that, we might even or not fully strictly try to uphold this principle. That could be a consideration also. So, I mean, Srila Prabhupada with devotees who, I mean, they clearly, I mean, more or less just stole money from the ISKCON institution. There are cases where they stole money or misappropriate. Misappropriate doesn't always mean to steal, actually. Sometimes it's used as a euphemism for stealing, but it can mean something somewhat different also. So Srila Prabhupada, especially for devotees that have done good service, even if they did something wrong or they went against the principles, he would often overlook that and try to encourage that precious spark of wanting to serve Krishna. So there are some thoughts. I left it inconclusive. Why? Well, life is like that. Like I say, there are principles which we should understand. We should all try to live according to the principles. We should try to make everyone understand the principles. At the same time, we have to understand that Iha sangsare bahu dustare, this world is a very difficult place. And for the sake of serving Krishna in the best way, there may be some not adjustment to the principle, but to the application of the principle also. And maybe not even everyone would agree with this principle. Like I say, someone, I mean, it's clear in my mind, but someone may say, yeah, why? What's wrong if someone takes this or that? So, but that is not a very principled kind of existence. And if our preaching work can't really go forward unless the core devotees, especially those who are the leaders and the temple residents, they are selfless. Otherwise, if people see that those who are supposed to be representing the Krishna conscious movement, they're making a business out of religion, then they won't be. They themselves cannot become selfless, and then the whole thing becomes just another materialistic religion. There are already so many of them. So we don't. We really need devotees to be selfless. And if some devotees are not able to practice that fully, then we should try to help them adjust to that circumstance also as much as is possible. Okay, any questions or comments about this? Yes. Sometimes we know this is the principle. Know what to do, what is practical. Well, that's the difficult question. That's why I left it. At the end, I said I didn't bring this to a conclusion because this world is very difficult, and knowing exactly how to act, what's the best thing to do, it's not always very easy, and it may be different in different cases. Because all circumstances are different. It's easy to say so-and-so made a mistake. Because people do make mistakes in various ways. And in Kali Yuga, especially. I mean, we see even in other yugas that there were misunderstandings and bad dealings between others. So exactly what's the best thing to do? It's not fully predictable how people will react to what you do, or how things will work out. Maya, her job is to make this world difficult. And it's not that when we join a spiritual organization that automatically everything becomes just easy. Rather, we in Krishna consciousness we have to face so many difficulties as tests from Maya. Therefore, we should be Krishna conscious and be Padma Patramivambhasa, like a lotus leaf which is born in mud and sits on it, but is not is beautiful, not of the nature of mud. Oh, that's the flower. Well, the leaf is on the water, but water doesn't stick to it. If you put a drop of water on the lotus leaf, it will komala dala jala jibana talamala, it falls down. So how to apply it? Well, that's called wisdom. Wisdom means how to live according to principles in a world the very nature of which goes against all wisdom. It's this kind of circular definition. How to live sanely in an insane world by seeing the underlying principle that we are meant for service to Krishna. That's supposed to come with age and experience. If one lives in this world cultivating spiritual knowledge, then gradually one is supposed to become wise as he learns the practical application of that. Generally it's thought that old people are wise, but if one spends one's whole life watching TV, then you grow up to be an old fool. No. Whereas there can be a young wise man also, if he's imbibed the message of Shastra. That may be also from previous lives, that one is picking up from previous lives. Yeah, anything else? Any more thoughts on this, on these grave topics? Heavy topics. Yeah. How do we prevent this mentality entering ourselves and others? I'm just repeating for the sake of the recording. Yeah.
That I think I deserve something.
I deserve something.
I should get some kind of reimbursement.
I should get some material reimbursement.
Yeah.
Well, let me answer that by giving the answer of Srila Prabhupada to another question. When George Harrison asked Srila Prabhupada, I can't remember exactly the question, but it was that how can you prevent ISKCON from becoming like another mundane religion or the leaders becoming corrupt? Prabhupada said, if they follow all the principles and chant 16 rounds, how can you maintain purity, he said, after you've gone. Prabhupada said, if they follow the principles and chant 16 rounds. And George was surprised by what seemed the simplisticness, as opposed to simplicity. Obviously it was simple, but it seemed almost simplistic. Just by such a simple formula, you can keep pure, and Prabhupada said, yeah, that will keep them pure. And we see that again and again and again, Srila Prabhupada, in his letters, emphasized that devotees, they should rise early, chant 16 rounds, associate with devotees, follow the morning program, all these different things. He emphasized again and again and again. So if someone is not doing that, they're having problems, and so that should be enforced. It may be in case some people actually do that and still they're difficult cases. But they're doing that should gradually purify the heart. Whereas if one doesn't do that, then already it's a sign that, first of all, he shouldn't be living in the ashram anyway. Second, that he's in poor consciousness. So that should be insisted on for brahmacharis. And then there are other considerations, health consideration. But it's probably better if a devotee has a long-standing health problem. Again, these are complex questions, that they shouldn't live in the ashram. They should be in a hospital or something, or maybe go home. Because the ashram is meant for people who can give and contribute. The ashram is not supposed to be a hospital. Of course, if devotees are sick, we should look after them. But if they have long-standing health problems, then maybe they should, you know, by which they're not able to follow sadhana for years together. Well, myself, for over a year, shortly after I took sannyas, I couldn't do much, actually. I had headaches and I could hardly speak, but I made it through the morning program pretty much every day. But after that, I couldn't do much else. I was living in Baroda. In those days, there were hardly anyone coming, so they were kind enough to look after me. And I saw one devotee who was in Belgrade. He'd had an accident and he could just lie on the bed all day. So he was still living in the ashram and people would come to him and he'd preach all day, actually. Even though he couldn't move anywhere or do anything. So we have to see. Again, we don't want to be inhumanly harsh and say if someone's just sick, just throw them out. On the other hand, we can't turn the ashram into, especially if it's just a few devotees, and just into some kind of medical hospital. In the case of devotees who have served for many, many years and they get old and sick, well, naturally they should be looked after. And they are, I've seen. I've seen, at least here in ISKCON India, I've seen devotees who get old. They're looked after, even if they're not a sannyasi. We saw in Bombay that Jagadananda Pandit and Kaveri, some others, some. Actually, they joined, when they joined, they're already quite old. But as they got older, they were looked after. They weren't thrown out due to incapacity. So again, we can't say exactly. Should we, how should we help others? Yeah, well, we should try to spot the symptoms early. I guess. In some cases, it can be difficult to help others also. People have to be ready to be helped. So, anything else? Kshurasya dhara nishita duratya durgang patas tat kavayo vadanti. It's sharp like a razor's edge. This path is sharp like a razor's edge. Difficult to traverse according to the learned, but by Krishna's grace we can cross over. So you may think, well, it's so tough, why advise anyone to join? Because, well, the beginning of that verse, which is Shurasya Dhara, it begins with Utishta Jagrata Prapya Varan Nibodhata, which means get up, wake up, attain the opportunity of human life. It's now's the chance. If we say, look to your material well-being first, well, then you're going to remain in the material world forever. Sometime we have to take the what may seem from a material perspective a risk and jump into Krishna consciousness and hold on for the mercy of Krishna. And as we also learn from Bhagavad Gita, svalpamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Even if whatever one does in Krishna consciousness is always for one's eternal benefit. In that regard, Srila Prabhupada also quotes, Tyaktavasva dharmam charanam bhujam hara bhajanna pakvo tapatit tato yadi yatra kvava bhadram abhudamushakim kovarta apto bhajatang svadharmataha. Whew, I didn't quote that verse for a long time. The purport of which is that if one gives up everything for the sake of serving Krishna, if one gives up all one's material duties for the sake of serving Krishna, and in the course of doing so, before one is fully perfect in Krishna consciousness, he falls down, he's not the loser. Whereas on the other hand, if one executes one's material duties very perfectly without being Krishna conscious, then there's no actual gain. So therefore, we, what from the material perspective might seem heartless, merciless, according to Daksha and others, preach to people to give your life to Krishna. Actually, we are followers of that renegade Narada Muni, not Daksha. We offer our full respects to Srila Narada Muni. Saying renegade, that was should be understood, that said it's praise by negation, by apparent insult. Well, from the material point of view, he is a renegade. All right, anything else? No, all right, that's enough for now then. And tomorrow, 4 o'clock. All right, Hare Krishna.